With the anathemas against Origen promulgated during the reign of Justinian and at his direct order and with his encouragement, which were issued in both 543 and then again in modified form in 553, roughly the time of the Second Council of Constantinople, we are looking at theological edicts by the emperor which are not, strictly speaking, part of the deliberations of an ecumenical council. This is somewhat controversial. In the past, it was thought that the anathemas against Origen of 553 were part of the conciliar deliberation, and it is possible that a number of the council fathers, if not a large number of them, were a part of the discussions that led up to these anathemas, which were effectively a reiteration of the condemnations that had been issued 10 years before in 543, but it was not, strictly speaking, part of the conciliar debates and discussions, and probably represents the work of a subsequent synod rather than the ecumenical council itself. So in general, this condemnation of Origen is no longer included, as it once was by most scholars, with the official acts of the Second Council of Constantinople, and therefore is not part of, does not carry the same weight or dignity of the results of an ecumenical council. These anathemas are very interesting in themselves. They represent the culmination of what is called the Second Originist Crisis. Origen himself was very controversial towards the end of his lifetime, as we've seen. His doctrines, particularly of the apocatastasis, of the universal restoration of all things, were highly controversial and were upsetting to many, especially those who need to use damnation as a threat when they preach. But also his Christology was regarded as defective. However, during his lifetime, he was not, strictly speaking, condemned. And although there were many in the late 4th century, particularly St. Jerome and others, who despised and execrated Origen under the influence of a significant number of, very specifically, anti-Originist theologians, the issue really comes to a head at a subsequent council, and indeed then becomes reiterated as a part of the traditionally reiterated or restated anathemas, curses, condemnations that will continue to be sounded by, that will continue to be copied out by subsequent ecumenical councils. This is a second rising up of the Originist crisis, and it raises a number of questions. Number one, how legitimate is it to condemn a theologian centuries after his death when he made it clear that he subjected himself to the wisdom of the church and would change his opinions if it was clear that his opinions were not in keeping with church teaching as it would be defined? And Origen knew perfectly well that many of the areas in which he was speculating had not yet been defined, and he declared himself willing to accept whatever judgment of the church would make on these questions. Nonetheless, the Emperor Justinian, himself a kind of an amateur but very well-studied theologian, becomes convinced, and as we'll see at the Second Council of Constantinople, promulgates the opinion that it is perfectly legitimate to condemn someone after their death if their propositions are in radical opposition to the later teaching of the church. This is certainly no longer the teaching of the church, and a person would not be declared a heretic unless they were obstinate in their refusal to accept correction. But this represents a second wave of concern about Origen, and the primary source of this concern seems to have been the imprudent use of Origen's teachings and possibly the misunderstanding and misapplication of texts taken from the writings, the more obscure writings of Evagrius Ponticus, which were particularly associated with several monasteries in Palestine, and which then became used in teaching in these monasteries and probably were bandied about in a way that was really inappropriate and indeed quite problematic, in that doctrines which will always necessarily be controversial, such as the apocatastasis, were suddenly a part of ordinary speculation and reflection, including some rather odd and bizarre concerns, bizarre from our perspective, drawn from Origen's teachings, which represented the ongoing speculation and kind of unnecessary interest or curiosity of these monastic communities in Palestine. If we look down just briefly at the 10 anathemas of 543, in the first anathema, of course, it's the question of the pre-existence of souls that is condemned. This was not officially condemned even at the in the late 4th century, in the late 300s. Saint Jerome wrote back to Saint Augustine, who had asked him whether or not it would be possible to officially condemn this doctrine, that no, the church has not yet officially ruled against it. And of course, there were Christians who believed in the pre-existence of souls at this time. It was a doctrine that, for example, solved the problem of original sin quite nicely. One did not have to have a theory of inheritance because, according to the doctrine of pre-existence of souls, all souls fell from union with God and thus are individually responsible for a kind of, if you will, choice made long before the creation of the universe, or at the time of the creation of the universe. And as you can see in number one, the idea that there were pre-existent souls that became weary, sated, tired of divine contemplation, and thus were separated from God, if you assert this, then you are, are anathema, then you are condemned. If one asserts that the soul of the Lord pre-existed, and this was a problem of Originist Christology, that Origen's mythology concerning the origin of the universe more or less required an unfallen nous, an unfallen intelligence, which then could become the vehicle of the incarnation. This is specifically condemned in number two, the idea that the soul of the Lord pre-existed and was united to God the Word before the incarnation. And if we continue dropping down in number four, whoever maintains that the Word of God basically appeared to and made himself the same as the other orders of fallen, because according to Origen's theology, even the angels are fallen, everything not in complete union with the Trinity has separated itself from God and is therefore in need of redemption, the idea or the possibility that God the Word would redeem all the orders of creation is condemned in number four. The idea that the Word of God would become a cherub to the cherubim, a seraph to the seraphim, that he became whatever was necessary for all the superior powers, this is condemned. The theology is developing that the angels had no need of salvation because they are not fallen. A strange doctrine, number five, that in the resurrection the bodies will be awakened in spherical form. This seems very odd to us, but Origen and others had speculated that a sphere was the most perfect shape and therefore would be the shape of the resurrected self. And number six, condemned is the notion that the sun, the moon, and the stars are themselves beings, that they have knowies, that they have souls, or that they are capable of reasoning, that they are a great, almost quasi-angelic beings. This is denied and indeed cursed in number six. Whoever maintains that the Lord Christ, as he was, will in the world to come also be crucified for the demons, that in some way Christ's death will be effective even for the demons, for those who are our enemies, this is anathematized. And again, that would have been part of the doctrine of the apocatastasis, that even the demons could be healed, could be restored to union. If we then look down to number nine, that the punishment of demons and godless beings will be temporally limited, effectively that the demons are in a kind of purgatory rather than an eternal hell, and that ultimately there will be a restoration of demons or godless human beings, this is condemned. And there's a general anathema directed specifically against Origen. 10 years later, in relationship to, but not as a part of, the deliberations of the Second Council of Constantinople, which we will consider separately, this second set of 15 anathemas were issued, many of which are identical to or very similar to the earlier 10 anathemas, but they include additional material. And it's been argued that the additional material represents not so much Origen's theology as the speculative musings of Evagrius Ponticus in his work, the Cephalia Gnostica, or the chapters of knowledge, which were clearly intended as texts for meditation by very advanced individuals, by monks and others who knew Evagrius' theory quite well, and was not intended simply to be read by everyone. This text survives only in a complete form in Syriac, having been condemned and reviled. The original Greek has been lost for the majority of this text, and it does make it difficult to determine whether this material represents an exact citation from Evagrius on the one hand, or perhaps from lost texts of Origen on the others, on the other hand. But if one looks at 5 and 6, here one has condemnations of the notion that there can be a movement up and down among the ranks of beings, that there could be a movement from the human down to the demonic state. One could die, as it were, and become a demon. Then one could somehow spiritually progress up and perhaps again become a human being, then move up into the angelic realms. A kind of metempsychosis or reincarnation, a notion of spiritual purification by being reborn or reestablished in a new body, a new form that would allow for purification in the form of either suffering or spiritual ascent. This is specifically condemned in number 5, and also a doctrine which is attributed to Evagrius, that there are two different species of demons, the above the earth demonic powers of the air and the infernal, those who lie beneath the surface of the earth in the depths. This, among other things, having to do with heavenly and earthly speculation, is condemned in number 6. And I'll leave you to look at the remainder of these anathemas as you wish. They represent a reminder of the kind of unfortunate speculation that tended to carry to unwise extremes the insights of people like Origen and Evagrius, their misuse, perhaps at a local level, and also the very great concern on the part of the imperial authority, in this case of Justinian, who regarded himself as a theologian, as to how these doctrines were being used, interpreted, or applied.